broke it all down to certain categories and then reassembled it into a 30-minute program, which was played in October on the air before the election.
All Hit Radio.
You are listening to WGXC 90.7 FM Accra, Catskill, Hudson, Athens, Germantown, Chatham, Coxsackie, hands-on community radio for Greene and Columbia counties.
Operation Unite Education and Cultural Arts Center offers a wide spectrum of programs to community youth.
The Youth in Action Youth Empowerment Program helps teens to acquire job readiness and leadership skills and understand local government. The academic program supports youth with tutoring and college prep experiences for their future in higher education.
Together we participate in a variety of programs that broaden our perspectives, such as music, dance, theater, and cultural celebrations.
For more information, call us at 518-828-3612.
Now, from Survival comes an economical do-it-yourself fallout shelter.
Civil defense approved and easy to assemble. Takes just a weekend.
Get maximum protection from nuclear fallout for your family.
See a Survival shelter today.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Carol Friedman of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
You're tuned to Radio Art, creative transmissions, sound experiments, noise, and more on WGXC 90.7 FM Accra.
Five, four, three, two, one.
What's the situation, Captain?
Situation Fluxus, a weekly one-hour show focused in on news and conversation about jazz and improvised music, radio, and more. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears in upstate New York. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Also, thank you for your feedback about the show. We've been green-lit to continue. After today, Situation Fluxus takes a break until September. We'll get back to the headlines at that time. We start off today's show with three rising seniors at the University of New Mexico's Department of Music, drummer Jesse Culberson, and saxophonist Christine Bonn and Steven Schultz. All right, so this is it. Thank you for joining me on Situation Fluxus.
Yeah.
All right. So I've got Jesse, Christine, and Steven. The three of you, when do classes start?
I think it's like August 20-something.
20th.
Yeah.
So when you see everyone heading towards the door, you'll follow, correct?
Yeah.
All right. Now, the three of you, you're in your final year. Do any of you have practicums coming up?
Not for us. Music ed majors do that, but we are all some form of performance.
Okay. So you're just going to be doing straight up classes this year. So, you know, I was thinking about my practicum and how it was, I looked so forward to it because I was so done with the electives, the classes that I had to take to fulfill the university's requirements for a well-rounded student. Like, I needed to learn geology. I didn't need to learn about rocks. And math, I was and continue to be a math failure. That's it. So let me start off by asking you, what has been like your worst class since you've been at the University of New Mexico?
Math.
Math was pretty tough, yeah.
Wow, what is it? I thought musicians were supposed to be really good at math. Why are we so horrible?
Yeah.
I guess all we need is to be able to count to four. One, two, three, four. One, two, three, four, right?
Right.
All right, let's talk about this past year. How did you learn? In person, remotely, or was it hybrid? Let's start with Steven.
It was hybrid for the most part. We would, you know, have our specific things to do online, and then we'd, you know, send in a video. It wasn't until the very end of the semester we had a chance to have lessons in person again. But, you know, it's kind of like you get what you put into it with the whole online, because it's like none of us asked to be online, but we got through it.
And Kristen and Jesse?
I was mostly online. I'm like a super senior, so I was done with lessons and ensemble, so I was just taking classes online.
It was like kind of hybrid. So like all of my Africana studies classes were online because we didn't like have to be in person. I was in sax quartet, which was like part of wind symphony because we couldn't do huge ensemble stuff. So we were outside under tents. And we would play outside, and if the weather was bad, we couldn't. So we were like sometimes outside, and we would just like record outside together. And all of my lessons were like, I had to record a video so that they could hear me, not through Zoom. And I had to learn how to do all this stuff, like recording transcriptions with the editing and the background.
Yikes. So I've got to ask you three, during the last 18 months, have you ever rethought your decision to pursue a career in music, especially jazz and improvised music? Let's start with Jesse.
Yeah, I would say so. I was like really starting to make it freelancing right when everything shut down. And so like when the state shut down, I was just like checking my email and I was like, there's $100 that I'm not going to get anymore. And there's another $100 and there's $400, you know? And so it was just like, that was extremely discouraging. And I had to get like a summer job and like, you know, just reading the news and all everything. I was like, I don't know if we're ever going to get out of this. So I might like consider other stuff, but, now I'm good. Like gigs are kind of back in full swing here in New Mexico. So I'm playing a lot and doing the same thing, but yes, definitely. I had doubts about finishing out the music degree.
Christine.
I did many times throughout my entire time I was here, mostly just like, I mean, just because of like self doubt, like, I'm not good enough to do this. And so a lot of it was just like me being really just depressed about playing music and like really hard on myself to play jazz and stuff. I'm like, oh, there's just like so many people better than me. Like, what's the point of me doing this?
Steven?
Absolutely. Many times, but thankfully I, you know, had a gig. I'm part of the Army band here, you know, National Guard band. And even during the pandemic, we were able to play, and like that kind of kept me, you know, hopeful that, you know, things would come back to some sort of normalcy here when it comes to like gigs and stuff. Because all the jam sessions I used to play at were just gone, and players I looked up to were not playing. And that was, you know, a little heartbreaking for me. Mm-hmm. But I feel like, you know, things are going to go back to normal. And so I'm feeling really helpful, and I'm excited to just finally finish this semester, honestly.
Kristen, if it wasn't music performance, is there another avenue in music that you would take?
Probably music ed. I like teaching, mostly privately, but I like teaching younger students music and stuff. So I think, and that was like, I was going to go into music, like music ed first until I switched. And so I think I would do music ed.
I must tell you, as I revealed, I used to teach music, and my favorite grade was second grade. They were as snappy as hell, and they could get jokes. It was really a lot of fun. They're like, they're just getting to the point when they understand everything. I love them. All right, how about you, Steven? If it wasn't performance, what avenue?
I would want to say music ed, because that's what I really want to end up doing, is teaching at a university. Okay. But if it came to like, you know, younger kids, like high school, middle school, elementary, both of my parents are band directors. And I've seen them struggle financially with that here in New Mexico. In Texas, it was a lot better, but I don't know if I would want that life just personally, but I've also thought about, I remember when I first started my degree here at UNM, I thought I wanted to do music therapy. I thought that was really awesome thing to give back to the community. And but I guess my love for jazz just kind of overtook that.
Hmm. And Jesse?
Yeah, if I weren't doing jazz, I would probably just do like general performance, but that's not really an answer. Like if I had to pick another music degree, I'd probably do theory and composition. Yeah.
Any particular group that you'd like to write for? Small ensemble, big ensemble?
Probably larger ensembles. Like I like to do a lot of, I mean, I do a lot of like small arrangements and stuff, but like when I get the chance to do something for like a bigger ensemble, it's always a lot of fun. So mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, are you all from New Mexico?
I am. I'm from Roswell.
Okay. And Christine?
I'm from Alaska.
Alaska. And Steven?
Well, I was born here in Albuquerque, but I grew up in El Paso, Texas.
Okay. So those of you who've had the opportunity to interact with your peers at other schools in other states, do you feel that you've had a more culturally grounded experience in the cultural heritage of your school and community than your peers?
Like in comparison to my peers? Like
in comparison. I mean, I have visited New Mexico, and I just love the architecture and the museums. But in looking at some of the courses at the University of New Mexico, they incorporate the history of its people. The Mexicans, Native Americans. That's why I asked the question.
I don't know. I don't want to say more because I can't speak to a whole lot of other schools, but I would say that we definitely, like, I don't know. I took an anthropology class as one of my like science electives or whatever. And we talked a lot about like Native American things within that class. And I feel like that's pretty important to New Mexico. And I think that UNM does a really good job honestly, I really do. I think there's a lot of things that you and I struggles with, but I think one of the things that they do a good job at is like that type of representation. You know, we have like a lot of really good ethnomusicology courses and things like that that are really comprehensive in a lot of areas I don't think a whole lot of other people get.
Either of you two?
I mean, there's a diversity requirement, I think. And so I took Africana studies, and that was how I got into that degree as well, to have a second major in that. And so I think like UNM is really good at having those, like, they have all kinds of classes about that. And they're all, even like ones that are like related to music too. Yeah, I think UNM does a good job at that.
And you, my friend, Stephen?
Yeah, I feel like I'm really fortunate to live in New Mexico. And, you know, I grew up in the Southwest my entire life and never really thought about, you know, things culturally. But, you know, I've been to like places like Oklahoma and, you know, it's just like different. It's like a different culture there compared to here. And I'm very, you know, thankful to be in a very like diverse community, especially at universities. You know, universities are usually like that. But I have taken an anthropology class here at UNM. It was about country music in native communities, which was pretty cool to learn about. I never really liked country music or had an appreciation for it, but that kind of gave me a lot better understanding of the music and, you know, that sort of thing. But
yeah, in my opinion, today's contemporary country music is just that. It's different. I don't like it. There, I said it. I'm on record. Okay.
And it's very professional. Yeah. Yeah.
Now, Jesse, you've already mentioned gigging right now. For Christine and Stephen, are you gigging?
Not right now. I'm trying to, well, I have like another job right now because I'm trying to like save up so that I can like do auditions for grad school, because I feel like they're all going to be in person and I need money. So I'm like, I've been trying to do that and like try to take lessons online with some other teachers.
And Stephen?
Yeah, a little bit. You know, I'll get invited to certain gigs around town, but you know, mainly the big thing is with the Guard for me, the National Guard band here in Albuquerque. That's really all I get to play professionally right now. I've seen a couple of people who graduated here from the university, or at least one that, you know, joined. He already has his degree too. So it's like, that's kind of like, you got to make your own opportunities, right? So,
well, you know, it's true. And there's the rub. We have Christine, who's got to work a job to pay for auditions, so she can't really look for gigs at the moment. Jesse, you're saying that the scene is starting to open up, fingers crossed. And Stephen, you've got a gig. You're with the Guard. So how do we go about this within the next year? Because soon this university is going to spit you out. How are you going to go about looking for work? Where do you start?
I think it all depends on what you want to do. I feel like a lot of people go to grad school and that's great, but like, I don't necessarily want to teach at the university level. I would rather just get a touring gig. So here, like, I basically, I get called by a lot of people, you know, just like, cause I've been playing at least in Albuquerque since I was in high school. So like, I know people, and then I just get called for a lot of stuff, and you just have to say yes to everything, because, you know, an opportunity might lead to another opportunity, which will lead to another opportunity.
Right.
So I'm just kind of hoping that, like, as people are really excited about live music returning, that I can just do as much of it as possible before it kind of returns back to the way it was like pre-pandemic. And then hopefully something will take off from there. But grad school is not in my future, I don't think, at least not right now.
Right. Now, Christine, did you say you are going to grad school?
Yeah.
And what will it be in?
I want to do a classical master's so that I have some, so that I'm more versatile to teach at the university level. If I want to do jazz and classical, I think I would have more opportunities for me. And so I'm really trying to practice classical saxophone right now and still take jazz lessons.
Yeah. So Christine, who are you listening to? Any saxophonists who are bridging that gap between classical and jazz or playing both separately?
I honestly don't know a lot.
Okay. Branford Marsalis, he's someone who has put out jazz as well as classical releases. Can't think of anyone off the top of my head. There are people though. And as you know, many reed players do double saxophone, mm-hmm. clarinet, flute. So they have more opportunities, say if they're doing pit work, playing for a musical. So, and Stephen, for now, it's the guard.
That's the big thing. I just, you know, seeing people graduate from UNM and join my unit since there's no gigs. Like, I just signed on for another 6 years, got a bonus, a big chunk of money. So
cool.
I'm hoping to put that somewhere useful. But
yeah,
definitely grad school. I haven't paid one dime for my education here, really, because the guard picked it up. But yeah, that's really it for that.
All right. So let's pick it up, because I think we're kind of getting down here. It's like, it's not all bad. You chose this profession, so go with it. You've got another year. Things change in this profession. As we come out of this pandemic, spaces are opening up for people to come and see people like you play. So keep positive, right? Keep positive. Let's talk about this. What have you grown to appreciate about performing jazz now that you're 1 year away from graduation? Like when you started, I'm sure you know more about this music and the people who have made it. So what have you grown to appreciate about this genre?
For me, it's definitely the, like, when I came into it, I was like, oh, I have to get good or whatever. But now, like, playing with other people, like, for me, there's nothing like interacting with a really good rhythm section. Like, when you just, like, all are vibing and making, like, eye contact and, like, appreciating, like, the people that you're playing with, I, like, really started to love playing with people. And, yeah, because, like, when I first came into it, I was like, oh, I love big band, I want to play in a saxophone section. But now I'm like, I love combos and like interacting with like people and playing with like people and all of each other and whatnot.
Beautiful, beautiful. Gentlemen, chime in with this.
I think the big thing, you know, when I first came in to the university here, it was like, I had all these heroes on the horn. I had, you know, all these players I looked up to. And it was like, how do I do that? How do I imitate that? How do I learn the vocabulary and the jazz language? And even theory wise, I was horrible when I got to the university. They put me in fundamentals. I was so bad, you know, fundamental theory. Kind of like a remedial thing, but because in the bands in Texas, all they really care about is, you know, can your kids play the music, you know, in high school, can your kids play the music, or can your kids play, you know, marching band or whatever, and, you know, we'd have a jazz band, and it's like, oh, does your ensemble sound good, you know? They wouldn't really focus on the theory, you know, theoretical side of the music, and that's something I've grown to appreciate. You know, it's just not about hearing, you know, it's all about, you know, if you can hear it, you can have it, right? You can learn the music by just listening, but also, you know, knowing the theoretical side is big. So,
Jesse?
To be honest with you, I, in high school, I wasn't really interested in jazz at all. And I was like, I've played in a bunch of punk bands and like metal bands and stuff. And that's what I was doing then. And so I, I chose jazz studies because that was going to give me the most time to play music on drum set. So I, like, this is such a dumb answer, but like all of it, just because I didn't really know any and at least a whole lot about jazz until I actually got into school. So like, I mean, yeah, I don't know, all of it, I would say.
Oh, that's...
I really like big band drumming, like a lot. I would consider that to be my, I don't know. I will always look fondly back on the big band stuff that we used to do in school.
Cool. All right. As we come down to the end of this, we're going to do this quickly. 1, 2, and 3. Okay. I want you to give me 3 of your goals for this last year in college. Who wants to go? Steven, I saw your hand up. Go. 3.
I'll just spit them out. Well, do my recital in person, hopefully. Hopefully be back, fingers crossed. Make my parents proud, make my family proud. And I guess just basically, you know, as anyone, self-improvement, grow, you know, and reflect on all I've learned here at the University of New Mexico.
Sweet. Jesse, 3.
I would like to be able to keep time at 3:50. I'm getting close. That's like my number one thing is I've always sucked at like up-tempo swing stuff. So I want to get really good at it before I get out of here. Before I graduate, I would like to have some kind of established gig. That would be really great. And then, I want to graduate summa. I'm really close. I had a really rough freshman year. And I have it now. I just need to make sure that I get good grades this semester. If I could do that, that'd be great.
And Christine, the big 3.
I want to land a GA position somewhere for sure, with where I get paid to go to school. I want to be able to find a school that, gives me the GA position where I can play both. Because I don't want to go to a school where I only play classical saxophone. I want to play jazz, and I still want to take jazz lessons. And I want to do a non-degree recital where I do what I want for as long as I want.
All lofty goals. Some of them I had when I was in school, especially the one about, I want to play what I want to play at my recital for as long as I want. I didn't get that. I'll get it in another life, though. I know I will.
For more information about the University of New Mexico Department of Music, music.unm.edu. And now for some music.
It was on this day, July 29th in 2014, that we lost the ever-soulful drummer Idris Muhammad. We took the title cut from his 1974 CTI release, Power of Soul. Grover Washington Jr. on saxophone, Bob James on keyboards, Gary King on bass, Joe Beck on guitar, Randy Brecker on flugelhorn and trumpet, and Ralph McDonald on percussion. Listening to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm your host, Cheryl Kay. Situation Fluxus ends its trial 8 weeks, takes a break, and returns in September. Please continue to send your comments, quips, anecdotes, as well as feedback to thejazzdisturbance@gmail.com, info@wgxc.org, or feedback@wgxc.org.
And here in Albuquerque, I think we have the All That Jazz program. I don't know. I have no idea how big the audience is, but the audience that we do have is invested. Mm-hmm. And I have a number of people that either reach out to me online or when they see me out and about around town will comment that they listen every Friday. And I'm gratified that they're enjoying it. And a lot of them are even listening intently enough that they will comment on specific recordings that I played in the last week or two. So I know it's not just music in the background while they're working. It's just, you know, background noise that they're actually listening and following along with what's happening in the music. And that's gratifying.
My interview today is with saxophonist and University of New Mexico Department of Music Professor of Jazz Studies, Glenn Koster. He's been a faculty member at the university since 1995. He also hosts All That Jazz on Fridays from noon to 1:30 p.m. on KUNM-FM in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Glenn, thank you. By the way, we're about to start this interview. So, Glenn, thank you for joining me on Situation Fluxus.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah. So you've been teaching at the University of New Mexico since 1995.
That's right.
When are you going to retire?
That's what I have a feeling people are starting to ask. And I think I have another few years in me.
We're not trying to put you out to pasture yet, Glenn.
Well, I enjoy health insurance. And so, you know.
So what was your teaching situation like over the last year? Was it remote, in person, hybrid?
My teaching at UNM was all remote. So it was all done online. And we had a couple of different categories of online teaching. They We had synchronous teaching and asynchronous teaching. Synchronous means we actually do a live Zoom meeting with the students. And so we have essentially an online version of a live class. Asynchronous means that we're just exchanging messages and I'm sending them assignments and receiving assignments back. So it was sort of a mix of those things.
Yikes.
Yes.
So describe for us one of your most chaotic days teaching remotely.
Let's see. I think one of the things that one day that was particularly chaotic was, and there were a few of them, are when there are technical difficulties. When as a teaching music classes online was, I think, a particular challenge because there were lots of times when I wanted to play music clips from my computer. I wanted to show a YouTube video of some music, and I wanted to be able to play on my keyboard that I have connected to my computer here. And trying to get all of those sound sources to go through Zoom was a real challenge. And I ended up having to do some research and find some extra software that would help basically pull all of those audio sources together into one stream that I could then send through Zoom so that they could hear all of those different things.
Yikes.
But until I got that figured out, every day was chaos as I was trying to, I would be playing on my keyboard and asking my students if they could hear me, and they would be shaking their head or giving me the thumbs down. And it was extremely frustrating there for a while.
You poor man. Teaching is exhausting. There's no question about it. How do you rejuvenate yourself year after year?
Well, I've often said that I think that one of the things I love about this job is that it is, by its very nature, broken up into these very discrete chunks where I have a semester that is 16 weeks long and then a little bit of a break and then another semester that's 16 weeks long. And then I often teach online classes during the summer. Even during normal times, I teach an online rock music appreciation class. And I often have that during the summer. And so having these discrete chunks, I often feel like I get a chance to try again. So I will start the semester with good intentions of having everything planned out and having lots of energy from a break. And then by the end of the semester, we're all kind of beaten down a little bit. And I think of things that I wish I could have gotten to at that semester or things that I wish I could have done better. And then I realize that, okay, in a few weeks, I get to start another semester and I get to sort of have a, it's not a do-over necessarily in terms of the content that I'm teaching, but it's a do-over in terms of me approaching the work. And in that respect, I have a hard time imagining surviving in a job where you work for 50 weeks a year and then you get a 2-week vacation and then you come back and work another 50 weeks. And it's just a cycle of, you know, if you're in business, it's a cycle of sales and accounts and sales and accounts that never really stops. And I get to essentially start over every few months.
Yeah. So you have not seen in person any of your ensembles in over a year, correct?
That's right.
Okay. So in coming back to them this fall, and you are the musical director of the Albuquerque Jazz Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
What are you going to expect from them? And what are your goals for these groups?
I think it's going to be a mixed bag. You mentioned the Albuquerque Jazz Orchestra, which is a big band that's out here in the community of professional players and music educators. And that band's been going almost 40 years now. And we just recently started playing gigs again and rehearsing. We did a July 4th gig, and we have another gig coming up at the end of this month. And I, with that group, having not been together for over a year, As an ensemble, it was a little bit rusty, but I was actually pleasantly surprised at how quickly things started to come back together. For the student groups, I think it's also going to be a mixed bag in terms of, I think there are some students that are self-motivated enough that they worked pretty hard during the last year and continued to get better. And I think that the pandemic and the shutdown of regular activities was detrimental to other students who may have lost momentum. So some students will be in good shape. Other students will be playing catch up a little bit. Sometimes it, literally physically in terms of being able to play their instruments, particularly brass players, trumpet and trombone players, if they don't play every day or at least several times a week, the muscles in their...
Yeah, their embouchure.
Their embouchure starts to lose strength and it becomes more difficult to play. And that can be true even for saxophonists as well. And for any other instrument, if they haven't spent a whole lot of time on their instruments over the last year, their physical techniques may have atrophied a little bit. So there, I have a feeling there's going to be a period of time of getting things up and running and getting students back into physical shape for playing and also mental and musical shape for particularly in jazz for improvising and creating music.
Right. Glenn, you're also a programmer on KUNM FM at the university.
That's right.
You host All That Jazz on Fridays from noon to 1:30.
Mm-hmm.
Comparing yourself to other programmers who, like you, are performers, what do you bring to the airwaves as an educator as well that you feel stands out?
I, for the most part, in addition to wanting to provide radio entertainment, musical entertainment for my listeners, I feel like I want to give them some little tidbits of information about some of the players that I program on my show. I almost always program music because it's music that I like. And so I don't, personally, I don't feel any compulsion or obligation to play recordings just because they're new or just because other people think that they're important recordings. I play stuff that I like pretty much. And I also try to play what I refer to as user-friendly jazz. So definitely jazz that has depth and content and artistic merit, but maybe not really super out, super progressive, rough around the edges jazz. And so my thinking is that if somebody stumbles onto my show on a Friday afternoon who is not already a jazz fan, that they might hear something that they can enjoy. And that philosophy was kind of formulated for me several years ago, probably, 15 years ago. For a couple of years, I did a show. There was a smooth jazz station in town. And on Sunday evenings, they would have a four-hour chunk of programming where they played straight ahead jazz. They did a live show that I did for 2 hours. And then after that was the a syndicated program hosted by Ramsey Lewis. And when I was doing that, I knew that my listeners were primarily people that tuned in for smooth jazz. And so I wanted to play lots of kind of upbeat, straight ahead jazz and jazz that was really swinging and grooving, hoping that I could attract some smooth jazz listeners to exploring some more straight ahead jazz. And so I was really thinking about playing jazz that I hoped would not alienate somebody who was coming to jazz from smooth jazz. And likewise on KUNM, they program a lot of different stuff. It's not primarily a jazz station. So before my show, is a talk show called Native American Calling, where they talk about Native American issues. And then right after my show is Afternoon Freeform, where DJs play literally any kind of music they want to play. And so there's this little pocket of jazz in the middle of that day. And I want to make that for people who are tuning in early to Afternoon Freeform and catch the end of my show, or hanging out after Native America Calling. I want to play jazz that hopefully will attract somebody who is a non-jazz listener or a very casual jazz listener.
And with my show, The Jazz Disturbance, that's on Sundays at 11 a.m., I program music. I start out pretty mellow at times, but I have no problem playing a 19-minute piece that's voices improvising over an ocean wave, or that, as you call it, what did you say, off the fringe, or off the cut? No, what did you say?
Rough around the edges, maybe?
Rough around the edges. That's totally me.
Yeah. And there are definitely times when I do listen to that music. And I don't, if there's something that I really like that's a little bit more edgy, I'll play it. I don't think I've ever gotten any calls of complaints. I did on my smooth, the radio show I had on the smooth jazz station. I would get phone calls of people saying, you know, it's Sunday night, I'm taking a bath and trying to relax to get my work week started, and you're playing this crazy jazz music. Please take it off.
Well, see, I'm like you. I do like a very healthy mix, mm-hmm, of the old and the new and the rough around the edges, as well as traditional stuff. It keeps it fresh. It keeps people listening, new listeners coming in and saying, what's that? Right? Yeah.
Absolutely.
So who's your favorite saxophonist that you play on your show?
That, as you can imagine, is a very tough question.
That's why I asked.
Here's what I would say. I would say my all-time favorite saxophonist is probably, I'm stalling because I'm trying to decide what to say today. I would say the saxophonist that makes me the happiest when I listen to him is Cannonball Adderley. So he's in the middle of a whole stack of players that I love to listen to, which would include Dexter Gordon, Sonny Rollins, John Coltrane, Charlie Parker. I spent quite a few years with baritone saxophone as my main instrument. And so baritone saxophonists like Pepper Adams and Nick Brignola and Ronnie Cuber were important to my own development as a saxophonist. And also, I would have to throw Hank Mobley into the mix.
I love Hank Mobley.
And he was a guy that the jazz critic Leonard Feather dubbed the middleweight champion of the tenor saxophone, which a lot of people think was kind of a diss. But I think what he was talking about was that while Hank Mobley was recording, John Coltrane and Sonny Rollins were like the two heavyweight champions, and they got more press, just like heavyweight champions in boxing get more press than the middleweight champions, which isn't to say that a middleweight champion is any less skilled and talented, but they just don't get the press that the heavyweights do.
But
Hank Mobley recorded a couple of albums that I think of as being almost like the perfect jazz album.
Was one of them Soul Station?
That's the one. And I've gone through periods of time where I just had that like in nonstop rotation in my car for weeks at a time, and singing along to every one of his solos. And it's not on that record, it's not just him, it's the rhythm section too, that of Art Blakey and Wynton Kelly and Paul Chambers. And those guys just sound so good. And the recording is great. It makes me happy even just talking about it.
I can tell.
I can hear that record in my head.
So have any of your students said to you, I want to be just like you, Mr. Koster. I want to be on the air.
Oh, heavens no. I don't know. I'm trying to think if there are any students of mine that I could imagine wanting to do any sort of radio stuff. I definitely have students. I think some of the ones that you talked to today are definitely into exploring recorded music and building their own record collections. I actually have more students that are into vinyl than into CDs. Students have basically completely abandoned the CD as a medium for delivering jazz. They either listen online or download files, or a bunch of them have started to get into vinyl.
Vinyl's not cheap.
It is not. It used to be when nobody wanted it. It was dirt cheap, but now that people are starting to get back into it, prices are jumping back up.
Forget that. Well, God love them, right?
Yes.
Yes. For more information about the University of New Mexico Department of Music, music.unm.edu. And for more information about KUNM-FM, KUNM.org. Thank you for tuning in to Situation Fluxus on WGXC 90.7 FM, listener-supported radio for open ears. I've been your host, Cheryl Kay. Situation Fluxus returns in September along with the other show that I host on Sundays, The Jazz Disturbance. I thank you all for your feedback about the show. If you do have comments, please send them to thejazzdisturbance@wgxc.org, info@wgxc.org, or feedback@wgxc.org. Thank you.